everyone, and welcome to Minute 18 of Season 12 of Movie Around Minute, the Daily Podcast, where we dig our way through the 1994 film The Shawshank Redemption, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is Andy Golding of Blueprint Review. Welcome back to the show. Yes, always fun having you on.
Thank you for having me back.
Especially when I can...
I was enjoying myself too.
Especially when I can throw some baseballs at you or ask you or quiz you on different things.
Yeah, it was a curveball, I think you said last time.
True. Very true. All right, so minute 18 begins with Red continuing his description of everything that's going on and ends with an inmate responding to Fatass's comment. So we ended things yesterday with Red being a little concerned about what's going on, even though he knows that this is a this is a regular thing that happens whenever they bring in new prisoners. It makes me wonder how often they would bring in new prisoners. Was it like a monthly thing? Was it a weekly thing? Was it something that just whenever they had a group of cons to bring, they brought in? You know, that type of thing. What do you think?
Yeah,
I don't have an answer, but yeah. what do you think?
I don't know. I suppose it would depend on the space when they had free cells but yeah, I don't know. It can't be too often, because once you've got them in there, then you have to wait for them to die or be moved somewhere else or be released. So I don't know. You think about a monthly thing, maybe?
I don't know. I mean, again, they brought in 14 guys. So are they keeping them all, somewhere and then going to transfer them together? I don't think they had 14, court cases on the same day and said, all right, these are the guys we're going to bring. They must have been kept in the local courthouse, jail, or whatever it is, and then bring them over.
Yeah, I assume so. I guess the turnover could be quicker if someone gets beaten to death on the first night every time.
Then they have,
freeze up a cell, at least, doesn't it?
Vacancies are always helpful.
Yeah.
And basically Red finishes his sentence because he started saying yesterday they don't quit till they reel, and then today he finishes by saying someone in. So I mean, it's very interesting that they're using the metaphor of fishing for this whole thing. The idea is that someone just referred to them as fresh fish, and there we go. So that's interesting the way that they do that. And then the shot changes. And
I mean, I suppose they could have easily used it for something.
That's true. That's true. But it works this way. I like the way that they did it.
It does. Yeah, I like fishing. Yeah, I like fishing as the metaphor.
If I remember correctly, I think that's how they refer to it in the book.
Straight from the book. Yeah.
So I think so, and the truth is that makes a lot of sense. That they would that they would take this type of terminology from Stephen King. So the truth is, it actually only talks about it on page 62 of 72 pages, which is really weird. Here, I'll even I can read from it where it talks about it. So on page 62 of the novel, it says he's talking basically at this point about the fact that Andy has broken out. And then he says he had time to study those walls, plenty of time. When the cell door slams and the lights go out, there's nothing else to look at. First timers usually had a hard time adjusting to the confinement of prison life. They get screw fever. They have to be hauled down to the infirmary and sedated a couple of times before they get on the beam. It's not unusual to hear some new member of our happy little family bang on the bars of his cell and screaming to be let out before the cries have gone on for long. The chants start up along the cell block. Fresh fish! Hey, little fishy! Fresh fish! Fresh fish! Got fresh fish today! Andy didn't flip out like that when he came to the shank in 1948, but that's not to say they didn't feel many of the same things. You may have come close to madness. Some and some go sailing right over the edge. Old life blown away in the wink of an eye. An indeterminate nightmare stretching out ahead, a long season in hell. So, again, it's not word for word, but it gives us the impression, at least from the book, that this isn't a game. You know, they started it in the movie. The choice is to make it a game.
Yeah. That's a very shrewd piece of adaptation from Frank Darabont to pull out that piece from towards the end of the story and put it at the up front there and
yeah.
kind of develop this idea of the fishing as well. That's a very good piece of adaptation.
Yeah. And I mean, everything we talk about that we're going to talk about in the next few days isn't in the book either. Just this whole thing with the fat ass.
Yeah.
And then we get a shot of Haywood, you know, sitting on the bed in his cell, but leaning against the bars. And he goes, "Hey, badass." Now, I find it really funny that they use that term here because, you know, as you mentioned yesterday and the day before, you're also a big fan of Stand By Me. And there's a character named Lardass. And both of these are written by Stephen King, but
Lardass, yeah,
that's right. But if you know, based on what I just said now, that it's not in the book, you know, I wonder if Darabont said, okay, well, you know, Stephen King uses Lardass, so I'll just use fat ass instead, you know, for the whole thing.
Maybe, yeah. I did kind of feel sorry for the actor Frank Medrano, is. Is that how you pronounce it?
I believe that's how you pronounce it. Yeah, pronounce it.
Yeah, I think of. I mean, this was his only his third film, and I imagine him going to his family, telling them about the role he's got. I got a speaking role in a major new Hollywood film, and they'd be like, "Wow, that's great! What's your character's name?" Fat ass. What's that like? A nickname? I suppose so. We never learn his real name.
Right.
So it's going to be fat ass in the credits.
Yeah, that's true. And
it's like 30-foot high letters. Our family name, Medrano, next to the words fat ass. I don't think the Medrano family are going to make a family trip to that premiere.
Yeah. Well, they might because they want to see the son, you know, in a Hollywood production. So there's something to that. I mean, he subsequently has 59 credits on IMDb. He was born on May 20th, 1958. So he was 36 when this movie came out, and he is now 68. So
still going strong. Then he's certainly good in this role. He's very good in this role.
He's very sympathetic.
It doesn't ask too much of him. But, yeah, he is. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So at this point, he you know, Haywood starts whispering to him, and he goes, "Hey, fat ass." Talk to me, boy. I know you're there. I can hear you breathing. And, you know, they give us a shot of Fat Ass in his cell, basically just crying. You know, not really, doesn't know how to deal with it. He's also sweating. You know, he's not just crying. He's sweating a lot. And, you know, obviously he's not taking this easily. For obvious reason. And Haywood then says to him, "Don't you listen to these nitwits? You hear me? This place ain't so bad." He goes, "I'll tell you what. I'll introduce you around, make you feel right at home." And, you know, it makes it sound as if Haywood is being genuine about this. You know, he's trying to be helpful. And then the next line tells us that he's not. He goes, "I know a couple of big old bull queers. I would just love to make your acquaintance, especially that big white mushy butt of yours." And at this point,
yeah,
go ahead.
Oh, yeah, I was just going to say, I think William Sadler is really good in this scene. I love his performance there. He's sort of playful, but in such a cruel way. It's a really nice performance as a Hayward.
Yeah, because again, this is what you need for this type of character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, William Sadler, famous to my generation as the Grim Reaper in Bill and Ted the Bogus Journey.
Well, he was also the bad guy in Die Hard 2.
Oh yeah.
We've gotten scenes of him.
Which I just learned is
There you
adapted
go.
from a novel.
And we get a scene of him doing naked Tai Chi. So yeah, there's another connection to Shawshank. So, this is very cruel the way that he's doing this. And then before we get into the response that Fatass is going to give, he used the term nitwits. Are you familiar with that term, and do you know what it means?
I'm familiar with the term nitwit. In fact, I think I used it a couple of episodes back to refer to my 20-year-old self, but I don't know where it comes from. I mean, at a guess, I would say in this country at least, nits how we refer to head lice, and so I would assume it was saying you've got the brain of a louse.
But nice try, nice try. But the it started being used in American slang in 19 around 1910, and it is a compound of the word nit, which means nothing. It's either a German or a Yiddish word that nit means nothing, not or nothing or no, something to that effect, and wit obviously means intelligence or sense. So basically what you're saying here is
Okay.
basically you're calling someone no brains.
Yes. Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Now there is another theory which goes along with what you said, all right, where a nit is derives from the word for a louse egg. All right, and since
Yeah.
nits are tiny, parasitic, and associated with dirt, calling someone a nitwit originally implies that they had a worthless mind. Right,
Okay.
and again, you also have other conjugations dealing with the term wit. You have dimwit, halfwit, things like that. So that
Yeah.
works too. And then Fatass just screams out and he goes, "God, I don't belong here." And then we hear from the crowd someone screams, "We have a winner." And then Fatass screams out, "I want to go home." And Haywood is really happy at this point. And he goes, "And it's Fatass by a nose." Then you can hear other people chanting all around, and one of the guys goes, "Hey, it's the fat guy, it's the fat guy, fresh fish, fat fish, fat fish." And then Fatass screams out again. He goes, "I don't belong here." More fresh fish stuff. And he goes, "I want to go home, I want my mommy." Then we hear one of the guys from in the upper tier says, "I had your mother." We'll find out tomorrow the rest of that phrase, but still, it's a nice it's
Yeah.
it even sounds like something that someone maybe ad-libbed.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll probably never know. I'm curious about Fatah, so I wonder what he did to
Yeah, I
end
was
up in
thinking about that too,
Shawshank.
but obviously there's no way of us knowing, but Shawshank is a prison for
No.
it's a high level prison, which means that he committed some very high level crimes. But apparently he still wants his mommy, when
Yes.
when he's taunted in the middle of the night.
Maybe he murdered his mum. Maybe that's that, and that's why he wants her
Maybe
back.
it is possible. so you're saying maybe he's saying I want my mommy because if I wouldn't have killed her, then I wouldn't be here. That's an interesting theory. I like that.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's an Oedipal thing. Maybe he murdered his dad.
Ah, maybe.
He could have murdered his father, and he wants his mum.
That's even more interesting. You've got some great theories.
Anyway, we'll never know. We'll never know.
You've got some great theories here.
I should write an entire fat ass movie.
Maybe. That would be very interesting to hear what what happened to him. Theoretically they could make a lot of short movies about all the different guys, but what they possibly did to get into Shawshank. And I mean, one of the things that I find really cool is that when we see fat ass crying and screaming out and stuff like that, we can actually see the number, what number of prisoner he is. Okay, so his number is 38466. Okay, do you think that Andy's number is close to that or not? Again, I'm not gonna try. I don't want you to. You don't have to tell me whether it's sequential or not, but do you think it's close?
Probably, yeah, I would have thought so if they came in the same
Okay, so
batch.
the answer is that I agree that it should be close because they came in the same batch, but it's not. So his starts 3-8, and Andy starts 3-7. So there's basically nearly 500 numbers between the two of them.
Okay.
So does that mean that the number that they're giving each prisoner is completely random?
I don't know. Does each prisoner get their own unique number? Do they reuse any numbers when other prisoners have gone, or do they have to have, is it like license plates? Do they have to have their own unique number?
That's a very good question. My assumption is that nowadays they definitely give them unique numbers because then with a database, you don't want to reuse the same numbers. They'd be like, oh, we're looking for prisoner 46234. And they'd be like, oh, wait a second. Is that Andy or is that Rob? Which one of them is it? Because they're both listed here as that being their number. That's what I mean. So I do believe it should be a unique number at some point. I truly believe so. I could be wrong. But that would be my guess. But it's interesting that it's close, but 500 is pretty far.
Yeah, that's a long way up, yeah.
I wouldn't say that it's something very close. And in the book, Andy's number is 81433 dash dash SHNK, I guess Shawshank. But obviously, there is absolutely no
Oh,
connection between those. I wouldn't look at it and say, "Oh, okay, well, that means that that he's he, that someone would have a that basically tells us that the numbering is not necessarily just based on the place you're in,
yeah.
that type of thing, because someone else could have the same number, but they're in I don't know Bangor prison or whatever it is. That's
Yeah.
don't know. Okay, that's all I have to say about this particular minute. Do you have anything else you wanted to say?
No, I don't think so. I think we've covered fat ass pretty well before his impending fate. So yeah, I'm ready to move
All
on.
right. So today's segment is called Midweek Morgan, where my guest will give the top five Morgan Freeman performances. So why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Okay, well, yes, I'm looking at mine. I've actually got quite a few performances that he gave in supporting roles. Interestingly enough, I think Morgan Freeman does quite excel in supporting roles. The first one is number five is Unforgiven, which I think is an interesting role for him because it's this old West tale, and he's obviously no mention of his race is made, and so I think he was, I don't think it was the role was written as a black man, but he was cast in that role, and he gives a great performance in it. But it's just interesting to me that nothing is made of his race at all in that film. You would think, given it being the Old West, given it being the sort of fairly brutal film it is in places, that there would be some kind of racial element to it. But it just suggests to me that it wasn't written as a role specifically for a black
Right.
actor.
It's true, but on the other hand, I mean
Okay,
the same thing applies here.
my
The same
number.
thing applies here. This character is not a black man in the book. He really is,
That's true. Yeah,
he
he.
really is an Irish redhead who they envision giving this role
Yeah.
to the late great Robert Redford. So
Yeah. Yeah. So it's interesting how he slots into these roles so well. My number four is a film where there's definitely something made of his race, and it's not a film that is that fashionable to like anymore, and I used to not like it, but I saw it a few years back and actually really enjoyed it. It's Driving Miss Daisy. I used to think of it as a terrible film, and the last time I saw it, I actually thought it was quite good. So, and he was very good in that role. So that's my number four. My number three is probably a bit of a nostalgia choice because it's one of the first sort of big blockbusters I remember coming out when I was growing up. It's Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. I think he's very good in the supporting role in that film. Yeah, Aziz, that's right. He was good because I mean, much as I really like that film, Kevin Costner was he wasn't there for his acting abilities, so Morgan Freeman carried a lot of their scenes together. I do quite like Kevin Costner actually, but he was definitely there for his matinee idol qualities more than anything in that film, I think. My number two is The Shawshank Redemption. It's in again. I think he's brilliant in this film. One thing I find interesting is he was nominated for an Oscar for this role, and it was best lead actor. Would you class it as a lead performance or a supporting role?
I would actually call it a lead. I think that Red is more the main character here than Andy. Because Red is, think about it, Red is telling the story.
I was interested in that because I couldn't quite make up my mind. And when you look at other like Oscar nominees, often it's blurry. If you look at The Godfather, Brando was nominated for lead, Pacino was nominated for supporting, but it's much more Pacino's story. But Brando is kind of the figurehead of it, so often it's like just that sort of how it's like Anthony Hopkins in Silence of the
That's right.
Lambs as well. Very short performance, but he's such a figurehead of it. So yeah. I hadn't made up my mind about it, but yeah, I think that's a persuasive argument that we are following Red's story sort of through. And in fact, if Tim Robbins had been nominated, would you have put him as a co-lead, or would you have put him as a
I think
supporting?
you would have to put him in as a co-lead, which I think is why
Yeah.
maybe it wasn't as pushed.
Yeah. Okay, well, yeah, so Shawshank Redemption, my number two. And my number one is a film that I only saw recently. And it's okay. It's not a great film, but I think Morgan Freeman is great in it. And that's Street Smart, where he plays this vicious pimp character. And it's not the sort of role that I was familiar with seeing Morgan Freeman in, but I think he's absolutely great in it. So, Street Smart
Oh
is my
wow,
number one.
interesting. That is a very interesting choice, and I like it. I like it. All right, and now we will play the daily game of name that book adaptation. So let's spin the wheel and see what you get. Round and around the wheel goes. Okay, so this movie is a movie that came out in 1930, and the original title was Enter Sir John.
To Sir John, 1930. Wow, we're going on back a long way here then. Oh,
You want a hint?
interesting. Yeah, I think I'm gonna need it.
Okay, it was directed by Hitchcock.
Oh, Hitchcock, right. A 1930 Hitchcock. Oof. Enter Sir John. Oh, I'm struggling to think what it'll be. Sir John. I've seen all the Hitchcock films as well, but can't put it together. I'm just trying to think through his filmography in my head. I did a project of watching all the Hitchcock films at one point, and so and I did it chronologically. So I'm trying to think through that chronological
Yeah,
filmography, but
I did
I'm
the
struggling to
same
get
thing,
it. I
but
think.
it was like
No, I can't. I don't think I can get there. I can't put it
all
together.
right, so the answer is murder.
Murder. Oh yeah. I vaguely remember that film. I think it was a bit of a mess. It's one of those. It's got that classic kind of early sound film kind of feel to it.
That's true. All right, and now we will play the other game, the other daily game called High Low. So let's spin the wheel and see what your three choices will be.
Okay.
Pounded around and around the wheel goes. Okay, the 2008 movie Slumdog Millionaire.
Okay. Slumdog Millionaire. I'm going to say 90%. And 8.1.
Oh, wow. That is just amazing. You're one off on each of them. It was 90 at 91%, and it gets an 8.
Oh,
Yeah.
really?
Very good. Very nice. Nicely done. Nicely done. All right, let's spin the wheel for the next one. The 1989 film My Left Foot.
Okay, My Left Foot, that was very popular. So I'm going to say 93% and 8.0.
Okay, well, it was 7.9, so that's really, really close. And it has a 98% rating on
98.
That's amazing. I liked it. I don't know if I would give it a 98%, but that's okay.
It's a long, long time since I saw My Left Foot.
All right, let's spin the wheel for your last one. So it'll be the 1992 film Scent of a Woman.
Right, Scent of a Woman, right. Oh, I'm going to put this one a bit lower. I'm going to say this is like 85% and 7.6.
Well, you got the Rotten Tomato on the spot. It's 85%, and the IMDb is
Oh, wow.
eight.
Oh, a bit higher on IMDb than I expected.
That's right. Okay, very nicely done, Andy. I'm impressed.
Thank you.
right. So, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Andy Olden?
Yep, you can find my writing at blueprintreview.co.uk, and you can find my new podcast with Todd Liebenow, Cartoon Breakdown, where we look at the golden age of animated shorts. Just search Cartoon Breakdown wherever you get your podcasts.
Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for MovieRob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, MovieRobMinute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to MovieRobMinute@MovieRob.net. So, until tomorrow, get busy
Get
living.
busy dying.